Welcome to the Monday Night Speaker Series in Woodbridge. This is our last meeting, and we're going to end on a high note with Sarita, who will be sharing her experience, strength, and hope.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sarita, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sarita.
Actually, to properly say it, it's Sarita, but not too many people can roll their R's. But that's okay. Wow, I'm just really honored that you guys asked me to do this. I only came into program, actually, in about 2 weeks. It'll be 2 years ago. It was November the 13th, I believe, of 2006 that I came in, and it stuck. I did do a couple of meetings, 6 months, maybe a year or so before then, but I guess I wasn't, I guess my life wasn't as unmanageable as it needed to be. But I think I was pretty much born with this addiction. There's an addiction within my family. I don't think I came out of the womb as a compulsive eater. And I really don't remember as a child having issues with food. But that was normal in the house, you know, the way we ate. But I started to notice maybe when I was about a pre-teenager or so, maybe anywhere from like 10 to 12, I noticed how, like with my cousins or maybe with some of my school friends, not that I had many close friends, but still, they just didn't think about the food the way I did. You know, they didn't eat. Like if I were to go over their houses or whatnot, their food habits and behaviors were not what I was familiar with. And for the longest time, I thought, well, what's wrong with them? You know, why don't you eat the way I eat? Because that's just weird. And as life went on, I realized that people, you know, quote-unquote normal people or normal eaters did not eat that way. They didn't have the behaviors that we had. They didn't associate food with love. You know, if I got a good test grade or I did a special project for my parents or, you know, chores or whatnot, I got rewarded with food. You know, to put up with going grocery shopping with my mom because, you know, what 10-year-old really wants to go to a supermarket? Well, I did. I liked it because I got to pick out all the goodies. I got to pick out all the breakfast stuff that I wanted to eat and make suggestions about different dinners and, you know, what kind of lunch preparations for school and all that kind of stuff. And as a reward, that's what I got. I put in the input, so I got to get it. And then there would be other times when, like if... I remember vividly there was one snack product, like a thing, that kind of fizzled out and was not popular anymore. But my dad found an entire box of them. It was like a dozen of them. And he was so happy with himself because he knew that this was my favorite. And he got it just for me. He got me an entire box of this stuff just for me. And my thought was, wow, he really does love me. Because he bought me $2.99, you know, worth of snack products, I feel like my father loved me. But that's how we were raised in the house. Sundays, we had a tradition of after church. We would stop at one place. My parents would get their coffee. And then, of course, there was a dozen things there. And the threat was if you didn't behave yourself in church, you didn't get one. When we were done, you didn't get anything. You didn't get the dessert. I don't think, I have three younger brothers. I don't think we always behaved because we just wanted to get the dessert. We put up with being in church because, again, what kid really wants to be in church? You know, all they hear is yada, yada, yada. And the whole time I'm thinking, I can't wait till we get out of here so we can go and stop and pick up this stuff and then, you know, get out of these nice clothes, get dirty, and eat. And usually Sundays were just grazing all day because my mom had just gone food shopping. So, you know, we would get all the snacks. And yeah, it was pretty much just one meal from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You know, you didn't have breakfast, lunch, dinner. You just ate. And, you know, the holidays, oh, God, you know, of course, from Halloween right on through to Easter. And, you know, we had the different birthdays, actually probably till April, because my brother and I have birthdays in April. So from Halloween to April, so more than half the year was just constantly getting rewarded by food. And but that's how we were raised. And so when I went to other people's homes and saw that they didn't eat that way, and that it wasn't just, you know, one or two people, that it was, you know, many different people, my friends and extended family and all this kind of stuff, that they didn't hover around the food at, you know, the Christmas parties, and that they weren't obsessing about, you know, getting in the Easter candy and all this kind of stuff. They just didn't talk about it. Well, why? It was, felt weird to me. I later learned that just wasn't healthy. As a kid, you look at pictures, and I was not overweight. As a matter of fact, I might have even been considered athletic. I did enjoy soccer. I liked riding my bike and, you know, playing outside. Back in the day when kids played outside. And but I did feel, again, I guess once puberty hit, I felt fat. I always felt like I was trying to cover up something, and I didn't fit in, you know, with the other kids. I always felt like there was some kind of manual or something that was passed down, and I missed it. I must have been absent that day, or maybe I was on the buffet line or something. I don't know, but at the gumball machine. And it's funny, though, with saying something like along the lines of, I felt like I didn't fit in. I have yet to meet someone in the rooms or out of the rooms that's ever said, oh, yeah, when I was a kid, I fit in with everyone. You know, so I think that's just humanness. But that was just something that came across my mind. But again, I didn't really feel like I fit in, whether it's whether everyone felt like that or not, doesn't matter. That's the way I felt. And I just didn't know how to be social with people. So I would instead just use the food. Didn't start putting on weight till I was a teenager. And by the time I graduated high school, I don't think I was more than about 15 pounds overweight, 20 pounds tops. I mean, really not that old. Looking back at those pictures, I was like, wow, I really wasn't as heavy as I thought I was. It also didn't help that my junior and senior year of high school, I took all classes. I didn't have a lunch period, so I think we had 9 periods. And so I had 9 classes every day. I had to get special permission and all this kind of stuff. So a lot of times, I would just kind of grab something at the cafeteria, or I would have to bag something with me in order to eat. And my teachers knew that I had to eat something. You can't just let a kid go all day without eating. So they were good about that. But very often what I would do instead is go get every snack available, whether it was bags or bars. And then there was always the fundraisers. I was in marching band. And we had to do the fundraisers, you know, $1 for all the candy and all that kind of stuff. And I must have eaten at least half of what we were supposed to sell. And sometimes that would be all I would eat all day, was like a couple of those packages, and wonder why I was sick at the end of the day. I did try to offset that with exercise, and the way I exercised was lifting weights. I didn't try to diet all that much. Never really did. I knew it just wasn't for me, so I figured, well, I'll exercise. So again, in high school, I started lifting the weights in the weight room. And I guess you could say I got a little obsessive about it because I was more into bodybuilding. I think I very easily could have gotten addicted to bodybuilding. Again, that addictive personality. I like the fact that the high school, the freshman boys cross country coach had told the boys that they weren't considered on the team until they get out bench press me. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, that was a little bit of an ego boost. Something that I really don't need help with because I have a big ego. I've heard it in the rooms. I'm an egomaniac with a low self-esteem. And that's why I was really excited about doing this thing, because I get to talk about my favorite subject for 40 minutes. Me, myself, and I, my three favorite. But, yeah, so my didn't really feel like I fit in. By the time I got to college, that's when the real hell started. Because when I was living at home, I didn't have the opportunity to go get as much food as I would have liked. I didn't have a car, not being much in walking distance or even biking distance to stores or anything like that. So I really didn't have access to too much food. But by the time I got to college, that was scary because, the cafeteria, all you can eat. And everything, they did have healthy choices. I didn't make those healthy choices, it was always the fried, the fast, the delivery, anything I could pick up quick in between classes, was getting lazy. If I had an 8 o'clock class, I got up at 7:45, literally rolled out of bed, maybe combed, put my hair up in a ponytail, and had a lot shorter hair back then, just went on my way. My hygiene, my appearance, my grooming kind of took a little bit of a nosedive. And that's something that I see even now, that when I'm not all that spiffy looking, maybe if I haven't washed my hair in a couple of days, or the laundry has several degrees of cleanliness, I only wore this once or twice, so when I start doing all that kind of stuff and have those behaviors of not grooming myself and not having the proper hygiene and not wearing appropriate attire, clean attire, I know that the disease is talking to me. But of course, I didn't know what it was back then. So I was starting to steal food. I didn't think of it as stealing. It really is stealing. Because my roommates would say, my mom sent me this box of whatever it was. And, so help yourself. Don't tell a food addict to help themselves to a box of whatever, because they're just going to eat the whole damn thing and then look for more. And that's, what I did. Sometimes I would try to make it so that it didn't look like I took anything. I would try to eat just a little bit and then maybe fluff things up so it didn't, memorize the way it looked like before I took anything, so that I would put it back exactly the way it was and cover it. Oh, just crazy, crazy, crazy. Taking my laundry quarters and going down to the snack machine and getting the different things, and just craziness. And, of course, there was always, midnight delivery. Get a couple of the girls in the dorm. Hey, you want to get something? Yeah, I can go for something. And just make it a binge fest. That's when I started having panic attacks. Had a couple. Very inconveniently. Those things are really inconvenient. They really put a damper on your day. And just, I didn't know what it was. I felt like I was going to die. I had this impending doom within me that something is horrifically wrong and I didn't know what. And it was like just this panic. And it's one thing to be afraid. It's another thing to not know why. At least when you're, you know, if you're afraid of a dog, there's a dog, you know, standing there growling at you. Well, you have something tangible. I had nothing tangible. There was, you know, the roof wasn't caving in. I didn't have a gun to my head, but man, that's a horrible feeling. And they continued on and off in college. And then after college, I did not continue. I wanted to be a music teacher, and it just wasn't for me. Still enjoy music, but I don't want to teach it. Came out, had some odd jobs. And again, I did the, you know, trying to lose weight. I would go to the gym. I signed up for a nutritionist. I did, you know, the various different shakes and pills and all those things that just wreak havoc on the body. And I would lose weight, but then gain it all back and then some. Because I wasn't taking off in a healthy way. My body was not acclimated to that sudden weight loss, and it didn't know how to process it. I put it into shock. I was abusing my body. I would take pills that were so high in caffeine. I remember there was one day I was up for 24 hours. I did not get one wink of shut-eye, and I was just shaking the whole day. I mean, just, and I couldn't stop myself. Okay, let's not take the full dose. I'll just take one instead of three. That was my addictive nature. I was so into wanting to lose the weight that that's what I did to myself, worrying about liver damage and kidney damage and God only knows what else. So continued on with that. While I was in college and right after I came out of college, I realized that I am a lesbian. It took a lot of acceptance. It took at least a good year for me to accept it and then to start coming out of the closet. But once I did, once my family knew, once my parents knew, once my family knew, I was telling everybody left and right. And then I did what I thought I had to do as a gay woman. I cut off all my hair. I went and purchased pretty much all men's clothes. That's all I wore was men's clothes, men's boots, everything, and became what I thought I had to be. Had the hair, I mean, real short, crop down to here. Took me years to get it to this length. And it wasn't me. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I didn't know how to be comfortable in my own skin. I never felt right. I never felt like the life that I was living was what I was supposed to be living. All throughout my childhood and even into my adulthood, before I came into program, I would sit on that damn couch and watch that television from sunup to sundown with the coffee table filled with food and just continue to eat until I was completely anesthetized. I had no idea where the time would go. Literally 14, 15 hours would go by on one of my days off. And when I would finally pry myself away from the television and realize, oh crap, I didn't do any housework. I didn't feed the dogs. I didn't, you know, do this. I didn't do food shopping. I didn't, you know, take care of that bill. I didn't do all of these things that I was supposed to do. And lo and behold, a panic attack, you know. But I would be feeding my face with the crap from the drive-thru or the delivery or from wherever, and be crying because I knew that what I was doing was just a horrible, horrible thing. One of my sorority sisters had given me this mug that I wound up detesting. It said, each new day is a gift from God, and how you live it is your gift to Him. I would look at that cup, and of course I couldn't throw it away. I told myself I couldn't throw it away because it was a gift, which I have a problem with that, which I'm working on. But really, I couldn't throw it away because it was the truth, and I knew that what I was doing was pretty much flipping God the bird is really what I was doing with the life that I was giving Him. The gift back to Him was, you gave me life, well, F you. That's how I felt. And I knew that that wasn't the proper attitude. That didn't feel right, but I said it anyway. I felt it anyway. So the disease progressed. I was buying things left and right to the point where I was tens of thousands of dollars in debt. Didn't know how to pay my rent. I was in a few relationships with women, with a few other women. One of them had become abusive. First it was just very controlling, and then it got to the point where it was physically and sexually abusive. And, you know, that's hard to think that, you know, one woman could abuse another woman. But you know what? Domestic violence doesn't just happen with, you know, in the straight world. It happens in the gay world. It happens, you know, it's one human to another. Again, it's a human problem. But coming out of those relationships and being just, I just felt like my soul had deteriorated, and I did not know how to get it back. Again, the physical problems were getting worse. At my heaviest weight, I was 220 pounds. That was getting out of that abusive relationship. Fortunately, my family, even though I had been isolating from them literally for years, they took me back. They welcomed me back with open arms. And I started doing yoga. This was like in 2001. And yoga is a spiritual practice. It's yoga means to yoke. It's uniting the mind with the body. And I was starting to lose the weight again. I think I lost like 53 pounds and was feeling good. I thought, aha, well, this is the trick. It is a spiritual practice. I'm more calm now because I'm doing yoga all the time. And I'm not so stressed out. I'm a stress eater. When I'm stressed out, I eat. So if I'm not stressed, I won't eat, right? That was my logic, so I thought I found the answer. In a way, it was partially the answer. It was partially correct. My yoga teachers, thank God for them, they had helped me. They had inspired me to become a massage therapist, which I still am. I've been a massage therapist for 5 years. But while I was going to school, I didn't make time for the yoga, and the food started getting back into the program, and I started putting on the weight again, till it got to the point where I was suicidal. I wanted to take sleeping pills. Once again, I had isolated. I'd gotten into another relationship and isolated from my family and even more in debt. When I got out of that, came home, started to try to clean myself up a bit, I knew that, you know, I'd gone to a couple of OA meetings, and again, I liked the message, but it didn't click with me. As a matter of fact, I started eating. I started having a resentment because OA told me that I eat because I'm stressed. Well, now I knew I'm stressed out, I'm going to eat. So I was consciously doing it. Instead of having a craving for it, and not understanding the craving, I understood the craving, but I did it anyway. So knowledge is not the answer. The awareness is not necessarily the answer. So it got to the point where I thought I was having a stomach ulcer. I had acid reflux from hell. It would wake me up 2-3 times a night. I would take the maximum over-the-counter drugs to, you know, acid reducers, and then the maximum dosage of Tums, and washing it down with Pepto-Bismol, literally from the bottle. That's how, and it would still come back. That's how bad. I should have been on prescription medication, but I didn't have health insurance, so that was what I had to do. I had eczema very badly on the back of my hands, which sucks when you're a massage therapist and constantly washing my hands and touching people. Not fun. And like I said, just suicidal. Did not want to live, or at least didn't want to live the life I was living. I figured, let me lose the weight, let me get the money, and let me get the girl, and my life would be okay. You know, if everything happened to me and for me, then my life would be okay. But it doesn't work that way. It got to the point where I just couldn't take it anymore, and I went back to OA. And I went to, this time I went to the Pride Center in North Brunswick. It was a Monday night. Again, I believe it was November the 13th. And I got there pretty much just in time, and then a young man walked in after me, and I remember thinking, the heck is this guy doing here? It's skinny mini, you know? It's like you wanted to give him something to eat, you know? Didn't look like he had an ounce of fat on him. And at one point, he very nonchalantly shares that he's maintaining an 85-pound weight loss, and my jaw just dropped. But more importantly, what he was saying and the way he was saying it, I knew that this guy was saying, I knew he had it together. I wanted that. I wanted what he has. The weight loss was nice, but I wanted what he had up here and what he had in here spiritually and in his heart. And that was the clincher for me to keep coming back. About a week after I was in program, I found out that my cousin's husband passed away. He was a diabetic, out of control, very overweight. He suffered from stomach ulcers quite frequently, and they thought he was having another stomach ulcer, and he was really having a heart attack, and he died. He was only 45 years old. And I said to myself, if I don't stay with this program, I'll be lucky to hit 45. I'll be lucky to hit 40 at the rate I'm going, because either the disease will take me or I will kill myself. So I came into program about 3 months later, got my sponsor, which was the single most life-changing thing for me, because here was someone that knew what they were talking about, because I had all these questions that needed answering, and she helped me to find those answers. Maybe she didn't give me the answers, but she helped me to find those answers. There's a series of books that I really enjoy where the title of the main character is Seeker of Truth. I love that. That's what I want to be. I want to be a seeker of truth. I want to find out what is my truth. Like tonight, my prayer before coming in here was, God, help me to speak my truth. And that's what it's all about, getting that truth. So since then, I've been maintaining an 85-pound weight loss, which is nice. But it is nothing in comparison to the 6 inches between my head, between my ears. I'm a lot more calm. I could deal with my crazy family better. Not best, but better. It has improved. A lot of things have improved for me. I am on a more even keel. As an addict, I have this black and white thinking. I have black and white moods. Either I'm completely ecstatic or I'm down in the dumps. And now I have those in-between moods a little bit more often. And there are some times I can actually, for that moment, be in that balance and enjoy the balance for what it is and remind myself that, all right, when I get out of balance, to remind myself, as long as I work program, that I will find that balance again. The steps so far, I love the idea of cleaning up my side of the street, finding out, I don't love finding out where I'm at fault. Nobody wants to know where, you know, that. I don't think really anyone can say that, I love knowing that I'm wrong. But to finally see it, to clear it up and know that I will feel better because all of these people in the program, you know, many of whom I see tonight that have been here before me, they've kind of been there and done that, and I see how happy they are and how even when they're having a really crappy day that they're able to handle it and get through it and come out smelling like roses. I would go through things and wind up smelling like poopy, you know. And I don't want that. I want to smell like roses too, darn it. The promises have been starting to come true for me. One of the amends that I've made really is to the government, and I guess to the, you can say to the people, to the citizens of the United States, of taking care of my back taxes. And even though I still owe, it's part of my debt, I'm paying them slowly but surely. And I kind of did some math, a couple weeks ago. Altogether, my debt, if you lumped everything up from the last few years and what I owe today, was around maybe $50,000. And so far, I've paid a little over $18,000 of it. And that's $18,000, that's a staggering figure. Because I was always focused on the 50 and not looking at, you know, I was looking at how far I had to go and not how far I've already come. And, you know, someone asked me, well, how did you do that? I said, well, I did it a dollar at a time. You know, kind of paraphrasing program. You do it one day at a time. It's one penny at a time. Just like, applying programs to, I don't know, housework. That, how do you take care of that mountain of laundry? Well, I do it one sock at a time. You know, one pair of underwear, one T-shirt at a time. I can't do the whole thing without doing this one pair of pants. You know, if I did everything else but didn't do this one pair of pants, I still wouldn't have the whole thing done. So I have to do this one pair of pants. And if that's all I do is fold one pair of pants and put it away, well, that's one less thing I have to do later. So that's what I'm doing now, taking it a little bit at a time. What program really helps me with is relationships. In, I guess, like four categories. First, the relationship with food. I have a healthier relationship with food now. I see it more as fuel. I enjoy my food, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to eat slop. But it's not the entertainment that it used to be. It's not the friend that I thought it was, or the the anesthetizer. This is going to get me through. This will pick me up. This will calm me down. It doesn't do any of those things. It fuels my body so I can get through, you know, do what I need to do. So that's the first one. The second one is my relationship with other people, whether it's my family, my loved ones, coworkers, you know, the people that are sitting in traffic with me, the guy behind the, you know, the clerk behind the counter, my relationships with them, how do I deal with them better? And those relationships really have been improving. My relationship with myself, also part of my amends process, was taking care of myself. I mean, abstinence is one of the first amends that I've made, but it's also doing good things like getting rid of a lot of clutter, of crap that I don't like, that I don't love. I studied a little bit of feng shui, and the first, I guess, rule you can say is when you're clearing up something, you look at this object, and if you can say to yourself, "I love this thing," and really truly mean it, then you keep it. if it's something else, and, well, I'm really not loving this thing, throw it out. So the amends to myself has been fantastic in that I'm working to meet my needs and understanding what those needs are as opposed to what my wants are. The most important relationship is my relationship with God, because I wasn't talking to God before. I wouldn't tell him about how I felt about, you know, the guy that cut me off in traffic, or what I really felt about my girlfriends at the time, or, you know, that I had a paper cut, whatever. I didn't tell him anything. It didn't occur to me that here was this being that he created these emotions in me in the first place. If he didn't take the time to instill these emotions in me, or the ability to feel these emotions, why wouldn't he be interested? So now I get to talk to God a little, you know, more often, and I'm starting to become a little bit more God conscious. Not all the time, you know, and I've come up with some doozers, just like it says in the big book. You know, we're going to start with this God consciousness, and we're not always going to be right on the money there, but I've had some loony ideas thinking that it was God, but I'm still practicing. I'm still learning. So that's okay. I'm going to make mistakes. So I thank God that I found this program, because as much as the weight loss is nice, the crap that I've cleared out of my head, out of my heart, out of my soul, is wonderful. I mentioned before that I felt like my soul was disintegrating. Well, my soul is being built up again, and it's full. My heart is full. I'm more joyful. I'm more grateful. And it's okay. Even when I'm sad, I feel the sadness, and it's okay. Again, going back to that series of books with The Seeker of Truth, the very last line, it's like a 12-book series, and the very last line, which I'd really like to leave you all with, that has really inspired me lately. I found it to be a challenge, a dare, and even an invitation. Your life is yours alone. Rise up and live it. Thank you so much for asking me here.
Thank you so much, Sarita.
Well, thank you.
Does anyone have a question?
I'm going to assume I'm Kathy, emotional reader, carbohydrate addict.
Hi, Kathy.
I'm assuming you've gone through the 12 steps, and I was wondering which step means the most to you in your recovery?
Well, actually, currently, right now, I'm still in the amends process with step 9, and I think the most cathartic for me was step 5, giving over that inventory. See, God, I need to be uncomfortable to do things. And in this case, it was pretty, I guess it was okay that I was a little impatient for it, because my sponsor and I, we just couldn't get together. And with scheduling issues, and she has physical limitations as well. So we did have to break it up. We did 2 hours face-to-face, and then, like, weeks went by, and we still needed to finish it. And she's like, look, we're just going to do it on the phone. But it was, just cleansing, like if you've ever just get all that ickiness off of you. So step 5 was the most cathartic step for me, I believe.
Do you sponsor people?
Do I sponsor people? Yes, I do. I usually, right now, I have 2 sponsees, and that's usually my limit because of my schedule and whatnot. It's funny, though, within the last, 4 or 5 months or so, I had 2 sponsees, and I wound up getting someone who was temporary, and it turned out that it worked out really great for both of us. We've both learned a lot. I learned so much from my sponsees. I don't think I would be abstinent if it wasn't for sponsoring. I wouldn't have remained abstinent.
Sarita, what would you say has been your greatest lesson?
Oh, my greatest lesson. Never give up. Because, this is such a learning process. I said before, making mistakes. God, I make mistakes all the time. Just like a little baby learning to walk. You know, I got to crawl before I can walk and run and skip and all that stuff. So I'm going to fall down quite a few times. So just don't give up. Never give up. Never give up, never surrender.
Anyone else? Well, thank you so much.